This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580 and online at WILL.UIUC.EDU. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. Thanks for joining us today. On the program today, Computers in You. And this afternoon, we welcome back to the program science and technology reporter for the News Gazette, Greg Klein. Greg writes two columns for the newspaper as well about computing. They run on Mondays in the Circuits section of the paper. Listeners, you can join us this afternoon with questions about computers and computing. The telephone number is in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, call toll-free, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Welcome back.
Thanks, Celeste. It's good to be here.
Good to see you. Well, we have a number of things we can talk about, I suppose, this afternoon before we get some calls in. No one waiting at the moment. One of the things that we could talk about here this afternoon, pretty interesting development. You can now run Windows on a Mac.
Yeah, isn't that wild?
Yeah.
Of course, there are some restrictions we have to put on that. You can't just do it on any Mac. You have to have one of the new machines that Apple is making that are running on chips or brains from the Intel Corporation. Right now, there are three of those. There's their little Mac Mini, their little square kind of candy box thing that would sit on your desk. Their nice iMac with the all-in-one computer with a big flat screen, and one of their laptop models that they're calling the MacBook Pro now instead of the old PowerBook name. So you need one of those. You can't do it on just any Mac. And then you need to go and get a piece of software that Apple is making available for free. It's called Bootcamp. At this point, it's what is commonly called in the geek world beta software, meaning it's still
right.
In a kind of a testing phase. But from my experience with it, it's in a pretty finished testing phase. There are a few people who've had issues with it depending on the setup of their machines, but most of the people I know who've used it and installed Windows on an Intel Mac have had a pretty seamless experience.
Okay.
What it allows you to do then is, you know, Windows has always run on Intel chips. So it's kind of a natural thing that they'd be able to run on these Intel chips too, because they're just like any other Intel chip, even though they're in a Mac. Although an Apple had to enable that, and that's what they've done with this Bootcamp software. What it does is it essentially divides your hard drive into two, right? You kind of pick whether you want it to be two equal parts or whether you'll have a bigger Mac drive and a smaller Windows drive or vice versa. You've got the Mac OS X operating system installed on one side, and then we've got Windows installed on another. And when you want to change systems, you just restart your computer, and a little window comes up and says, do you want to run in Mac OS X or do you want to run in Windows?
Yeah.
Windows XP, I might add, also, at this point.
Right.
That's your choice, and we'll see how that develops down the road.
Yeah. Now, Mac users are a pretty loyal bunch. So are people going for this?
Well, I think that's the other thing. You know, it's kind of burdensome to have to restart your computer, right? Although I understand once you do it, if you restart into Windows and you have, let's say, one of those iMacs, it's a nicely appointed machine, that it runs very well. You could even run some games on there, you know, which are pretty demanding. But I think that the attraction for people will be, you know, a lot of folks would like to run OS X for various reasons, maybe some of the ease of use features that it offers, maybe the fact, and this is probably a big one, that at least at this point, it's a lot smaller target for viruses and spyware and adware and all the nasty malicious programs that get into your Windows machine and wreak havoc. But they've got some reason that they need to run Windows. Maybe they've got, work software that they have to run that only is made for, as a lot of professional software is only made for Windows. You know, maybe it's some kind of specialized database software or that kind of thing. So this would give them a chance to, they could run their Mac OS X at home, and when they needed to switch and do some work, they could switch and do some work and then switch back to normally running Mac OS X. The other thing is, I think people that are into games, you know, heavily into games, a lot of games never get made for the Mac because of the small, fairly small market share that Apple has. When they do get made, they get made later. You know, it's 6 months, a year down the road after they appear on the Windows side. So this, you know, is an opportunity for people that are interested in games. You can boot into Windows and run your games, and then when you're doing your normal stuff and you don't want to have to contend with all those viruses and spyware and adware, you can go back and use Mac OS X. There's another interesting aspect to this. Is, you know, this is Apple's software, Boot Camp. There's a company that is making software that's called Parallels. And if you typed in www.parallels.com, you'd go to their site. And they're making something that's called virtualization software, all right? These chips, these Intel chips, which they're referred to as dual core because in essence they've got two brains on one chip, right? And Intel has built into these the ability to run virtual machines, okay? So they can act like they're two machines at once or three machines at once even. And what this Parallels software, which is again the company's making available for free and in a beta state now, not quite as stable as Bootcamp from what I understand, what it allows you to do is to run Mac OS X and Windows and perhaps even Linux simultaneously. So each one is in its own window, in essence. And you can flip between windows on your screen and flip between different operating systems. And as I understand it, that works pretty well in addition to the boot camp situation.
Yeah. Greg Klein, our guest this afternoon here on the Afternoon Magazine, the topic, computers. Listeners, if you'd like to join us, if you've got a question, give us a call, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. We have a listener waiting to talk with us on line one in Urbana. Hi.
Hi. I actually lied. I'm not in Urbana. I'm where I normally am. I'm in Indiana on the interstate, and I picked up WILL over in Ohio earlier this morning as I was driving west. I have a son who is a loyal Mac user and a husband who uses an IBM clone, you know, a PC, and I use a Dell laptop. My son has been after me for years to switch to a Macintosh. He did some, in college, he earned some money by doing computer support, and so the Macs were just so much easier to deal with, and less support was needed. How easy is it to switch from one to the other? And my other two concerns are, one is that the laptops, as I understand it, don't have a CD ROM drive, so how do you install software? And they also apparently don't have a modem. So if I go someplace that doesn't have broadband service, which I do, what do I do? This sounds like it's got a lot of problems. What do you suggest?
Well, let me address those last two things first. One is they all have a CD drive. In fact, they all pretty much have a CD reading and writing drive, and at least a DVD reading drive, and in most cases, a DVD reading and writing drive. So that takes care of installing software. What they don't have and haven't had for the longest time is a floppy drive. Now, some people don't like that, but from my perspective, the floppy drive has long ago outlived its usefulness. And in fact, I doubt that you're going to find very much software these days that you're going to be installing from a floppy. It's all going to be on a CD or a DVD.
I thought it was a CD drive that they had dropped as well.
No. Now, the drives they have aren't purely CD drives, but they do read and write CDs. They're drives that are combo drives that will handle both CDs and DVDs. So it's not a specific drive, just solely a CD drive, right? The modem thing, I don't, in my opinion, okay, at this point, I think that was a mistake. that they shouldn't have left the modem out, because there are still, and myself included, and you, as you mentioned, people and situations we are in where we don't have access to wireless broadband connections, even let alone wired broadband connections, and sometimes we need to use a modem. So I kind of wish that they had left a modem in there. Now, what they have done is they make a little external modem, a little USB external modem that you can plug into one of your USB ports and connect to a regular phone line. So that's the solution.
Something more to carry.
Yes, that's exactly the problem with it. You're exactly right. I understand the reasoning, you know. Yeah, it's true. They all come with wireless. And wireless access points are becoming fairly ubiquitous. I mean, they're in about every coffee shop and restaurants and even some bars, for gosh sakes. You know, so you can find them just about anywhere. But there still are times when, as you know and I know, you need to use a modem. And I kind of wish they'd left the modem in there. That's the only bad thing that I'd say about the way they've configured their new laptops is that I wish they had left the modem in there.
So how easy is it to switch operating
now,
systems?
To switch operating systems, I don't know that it depends is what I'm going to say, because if you've been using Windows for a long time and you're used to the way that Windows works, okay, you'll have some re-education to go through, and it'll take a little while. When I first started playing around with Mac OS X after using, you know, the original classic Macintosh system for a long time and using Windows, you know, I had probably a six-month transition period before I got really comfortable with the way OS X works. Now, once I got comfortable with the way it works, I think it's really logical. And in fact, what I found is that for people that are new to computers, where they're just stepping in, this is their first computer, it's even easier for them to pick up than somebody who comes in with old habits that die hard, right? So there's that. And then the other question you have to ask yourself is, okay, what software do I need to use with that operating system? And, you know, if you use Microsoft Office, for example, you're in great shape because Microsoft makes a version of Office for OS X, and it's essentially seamlessly compatible with the Windows version of Office. If you've got some specialized Windows software, you know that your company uses or that you wouldn't want to give up, that's not made on the Mac side, that's something you may want to think about. On the other hand, as we've just been talking about, if you've got that one piece of software you don't want to give up or can't give up because of work issues, now you've got this option of having both OS X and Windows and booting into Windows and using that software when you need to.
Okay, thank you.
All right.
Okay, thanks for the call. Good luck. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Greg Klein is our guest today. This is a program we do once a month on the third Thursday of the month. We call it Computers and You. You're invited to join us with questions about computers this afternoon. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. Speaking of operating systems, Windows has got one in the works.
Well, eventually.
It's been delayed, apparently, huh?
Yes. It's Windows Vista. It's going to be the next version of Windows. It's supposed to have a lot of really nice whiz-bang features, look really good. More importantly, it's supposed to be far more secure. So we'll see when it comes down the road. And the thing is that it's going to be coming down the road later than anticipated. The schedule at this point is that by the end of the year, they should have the professional version out, the version for business users, essentially. But it's going to be next year, early next year, probably before you see the consumer version.
Okay.
So, but it is, I think, something... people, if they're buying computers now, it's something that they might want to keep in mind and get a computer with a Windows machine with a little more oomph than they might otherwise, anticipating that Vista is going to be fairly demanding, which apparently it is.
Okay. Yeah. I saw some advice recently in the newspaper. If you're in the market for a computer now, you might want to look for something that says Windows Vista capable.
Right. Right. That's since Microsoft is late with the system, they're going to be labeling new machines you might buy as being Vista capable, if they are, so you might look for that. And I would suggest that you look for that and then you buy a step up, because almost inevitably, and Microsoft is not alone in this, you know, companies understate the real comfort point for running their software. So, you know, Microsoft is going to label machines Vista capable that meet the minimum requirements. But, you know, in actual practice, those minimum requirements could leave you sitting around waiting for things to happen a lot. So you might think about a step up even from that.
Okay. Let's talk with another listener. Caller in Danville, line one. Hi.
Hi, my name's Maureen. Thank you for taking my call. This is off the subject of systems. I have a different problem. I have a computer that's probably 5 years old. And in the past 6 months or so, it's taken to when I bring it up, it automatically locks up. I can't move my pointer with the mouse or anything. And the only way I can get around it is to shut it back off, unplug the mouse from the back of the CPU, put it back in, and bring it up again. Is there any way?
And then it works.
I could fix this?
And it works after you do that?
I'm sorry. I can't hear you, I guess. There. Go ahead.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Greg is asking the caller, when you unplug it and then plug it back in, then you're in business.
Yes. Sometimes it will take two or three times, though. Mostly it happens the first time that I unplug the mouse from the back. I shut the unit off, unplug the mouse from the back, put it back in, and most of the time it comes right back up. But sometimes it'll do it two or three times.
So what happens is you turn on the computer, it comes up and the mouse is frozen. You can't move your mouse pointer.
Correct.
So how do you shut it off at that point? Do you just shut off the power?
Yes.
Okay. And then
I can.
So you power it down, mm-hmm. and then you plug and unplug the mouse, mm-hmm. and then you power it back up.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it works,
yeah.
and sometimes it doesn't, and you have to do this two or three times.
Correct.
Okay. Well, and again, this is one of those things that's A, kind of mysterious, and B, could be a variety of things. But let me just say this generally, okay? What it sounds to me like is happening is that obviously for some reason in some startups that you have, the computer is not recognizing your mouse, okay? So one of the things I might wonder about off the top of my head is whether that the USB port you've got your mouse plugged into, whether there's a, you know, a problem with that or whether there's a problem with your mouse. Have you tried a different mouse?
Yes.
And that doesn't help?
Did not.
It did not help. Now, how many USB – is this a USB mouse, by the way? Does it have a square end or a round end?
It has a round end.
A round end. So it's a –
into where the mouse goes on the back of the machine.
Okay. Do you have any ports back there, any little slots that are square? Do you have USB?
I have some, but I'm not sure if I have any available.
What version of Windows are you running?
2000, I think.
Okay, Windows 2000. Well, what other things do you have plugged into your USB ports? Do you know?
Not for sure. My friend is the one that easily
sets
me up on everything.
If you've tried different mice, then you know it's not the particular mouse, right?
Right.
So now I'm wondering whether it's a problem with that particular port, okay, that you're plugging it into, which is probably a PS2 port, okay, the round one. What I would do is beg, borrow, or steal a mouse, a USB mouse, one with a square end, if you've got USB ports, okay, And say you've got a printer or something plugged into that USB port. Just temporarily unplug that, right? And try the mouse in there. Try a USB mouse and see if you get the problem, okay? Now, if you don't get the problem, if you get a USB mouse and it works fine, right, then you can be pretty sure that the problem is over on the side, on the PS2 port side, where that round connection, right? And, you know, there could be a couple of reasons for that. It could be a hardware thing. You know, maybe that port is going bad. Maybe the electronics there are going bad. It could be a software thing where for some reason there's something else trying to use that port. And by shutting down the computer, what you do is essentially you clear out that pathway so that when you start it back up with that mouse plugged in, now you've got a clear pathway and it's not being blocked anymore. Okay? So those are kind of that's what I'd start with trying.
Okay, and Maureen, before I'm gonna bring you back up, but I want you to, if you wouldn't mind, turn down the radio and try and listen to us on the telephone. I know you were apparently having some difficulty there, but if you could turn down the radio, we won't have a feedback problem here.
I usually do that, but
there.
Okay, I'm on a delivery. I have to make a delivery here, so I'm going to have to get off the phone here.
Okay.
So I try that. Try a different kind of mouse. If you have a USB port, try it in there. See if that solves the problem. And if it does, then you've got an idea that it's some issue with that round port.
Okay. Good luck to Maureen. Other questions are invited. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. And anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455, 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. And no one's waiting at the moment, so if you've got a question, if you'd like some advice about troubleshooting, give us a call. We'll get you right in. Well, let's talk about something else before we take our next call. How about Google Calendar?
Yeah. Yet another Google thing, right? It's
right.
Like every time you turn around, those guys are doing something else new. So they've got a new online calendaring system. If you type in calendar.google.com, you can go there and get the lowdown on it. You need to have a Gmail account, I believe, to use it. But, you know, you can get that for free as well. And it's just a nice online calendar where you can keep your schedule and look at it anywhere. What it lacks, I think, and again, this is Google is presenting it as beta, right? So it's still kind of in the testing phase. But I've been playing around with it for the last week or so, and it seems to be pretty refined as well, and has some neat features. What it lacks, I think, at this point, is it doesn't have anything in the nature of to-do lists, right? So you don't have. You can't put your little list of non-timed tasks up there with a checkbox to check them off as you get them done if that's something you like to do. You know, that's one of the things that pretty much controls my life, so I would kind of miss that if I relied solely on Google Calendar, although you can make non-timed appointments and kind of use those as your to-do list. You can set one of the concerns people have asked me about when I've been talking to them about this is, well, you know, then can anybody see what I'm doing at,
right.
at any given time? And yeah, you know, maybe there are things you wouldn't want people to see. And there are a couple things about this that I think are good in that way. One is you can set it in various ways to show some stuff and not to show other things, or you can set it to not show anything. So only you can get to your calendar, right? Or you can set it so that only certain other people are allowed to get to your calendar, you and certain other people. You can also set up different calendars. So you might have a personal calendar that you've got set for nobody to see but you, or nobody to see but you and your family, or nobody to see but you and your family and friends. You might have a public calendar that you know, you'd want anybody to be able to see and You could have both those. Some of the interesting things I think it does, you can set it to, and I've been doing this, it's kind of funny, to email you your daily agenda every morning. So at 5 o'clock every morning, I get an email from my Google Calendar telling me what I'm going to be doing that day, which I think is kind of an interesting thing.
Hmm.
And I had an interesting experience. Someone actually I was setting up an appointment with to do an interview actually referred me to their online calendar to pick out a time for for when we
interesting.
When
well,
we,
that would be handy, wouldn't it?
Yeah, for, yeah. In a lot of ways, yeah. That would be handy. So made the process kind of easy.
Okay. Let's talk with a listener in Champaign now. Line one, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Speaking of Google, I wonder what your guest thinks about security on Google, email security on Gmail. Someone has told me, for example, if you do a search in Google itself, sometimes your email conversations can turn up in the search results. So generally, what does he think about the security in Gmail? I'll hang up and listen. Thank you.
Okay.
Well, I'll say this, okay? Anything you put online, all right, is not secure, okay? There are levels of security, but nothing is absolutely secure if you're posting it on the web, right? It's a big public place. Even if it's supposed to be in a space that nobody can get to, without passwords and authorization and all that, let's face it, there are people who make it their business to get to places like that. So you've always got to have that concern in mind, no matter what you do online, right? Any of it may be found by somebody, and particularly if you make it public, you know, it may be easily found by somebody. Now, I've read that about Gmail sometimes appearing in Google searches, and in fact have at various times tried to see if I could get that to happen with my Gmail account, on which I really don't get anything, you know, that I care whether anybody sees it or not. There's no secret information there. And I've never been able to get a Google search, a general Google search, to come up with my email. Mm-hmm. A Google search on the web. Now, you know, when you have a Gmail account and you've got, you know, several hundred messages, you're using Google to search those when you're trying to find a message yourself. So it's obviously there in the system, and I suppose the possibility exists that just somebody doing a general web search might find it, but I have not been able to get that to happen in my toying around with it to see if I could, after having read about that, if I could get it to do that.
Yeah, you know, Google and other web browsers, apparently, somehow they keep track of where everybody has been.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering, could they do that with calendar programs, whether it be Google Calendar or Microsoft Outlook?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I'm sure that's all in the data stream they have. Now, what they'll tell you, whether you want to accept it or not is up to you. But, you know, what they'll tell you is there are things they do with stuff like that to make it not identifiable with an individual, right? So it's just in the data stream, but it can't be picked out as being Celeste's or Greg's. So you have to trust them that that's the case, and you have to trust that that no clever hacker cracker out there is going to find a way to do it anyway, right?
Right.
Or you know. That the FBI or NSA aren't going to find a way to do it anyway.
Or Aunt Millie.
Yeah, or Aunt Millie. So, anything that's online, it's out there, right? And so somebody might get to it. If you want something to be in a computer to be absolutely secure, then, pretty much your option is to disconnect that computer from the internet. Not allow anyone else to use it but you. That's the only way you can be absolutely sure. Yeah, well, yeah.
Have
you
a
could
fire going
that.
In the... Yeah, okay. Let's talk with another listener, caller in Urbana. Hi. Hello. Line one, hi. Go ahead.
Yes. I think the most legitimate cause for concern with Google Mail may be that because they keep everything essentially forever, government could subpoena information and go through that mail and possibly find something that they would be interested in. And I think that has been a cause of concern among some experts.
Right. Well, Yeah, and I don't know whether, I'd say that I think that's the biggest concern, but I think it certainly, could be a concern. And again, it goes back to what I said about if you're going to put something online, even if you think you're putting it in a private space online, the fact is it's online and somebody may be able to access it.
I agree.
So you got to think about that when you're doing web pages or doing web logs or doing online mail or doing an online calendar or whatever.
Okay, let's talk with another listener caller in Edgar County, line 4. Hi.
Hi. I got 2 questions. First of all, I'm using Nero to transfer to CDRW, and this morning in transferring a file, I had an error thing pop up, and so I canceled it and went back and did it again. And they said, "Do you want to continue?" And I thought, "Well, what have I got to lose?" So I continued, and it seemed like when I reviewed the disk, that it was all right. What's possibly happening?
Was the disk not all right?
It was. No, I went and reviewed what I had in the file, on the picture section, and then what I had on the file on the CDRW disk.
So you were burning pictures to a CD?
Yeah. Uh huh.
Okay. And what, sir, did the error say?
I knew you were going to ask that. I'm just going to tell you that it used the word error.
Okay.
And do you wish to continue?
I'll say 2 things. Okay. One is, since you continued and it burned the CD fine, I wouldn't worry about it right now.
Right. Okay. That's the philosophy I have, too.
Yeah. If you see the error again, copy down the text of that and email it to me. I'll certainly try and come up with an answer for you.
Okay, very good.
Do you know my email?
No, but I'd be happy to write it down.
It's just Kline, Kline, at news-gazette.com.
News-gazette.com. Uh-huh.
So if you see that error message again, you jot that down and you send it to me.
Yeah. Okay, second question. I had the button on my tower go out, the power button.
Uh-huh.
It just went in. So anyway, I took it to the tech guy, and he repaired it. And he happened to notice that I had an awful lot of information on my, computer hard drive.
So it was getting pretty full.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so he had an old one laying around. And he installed it and then told me after the fact, rather than calling and asking, would you like to have this put on? Which is fine. He only charged me labor, I guess. I don't know. I don't understand how to tabulate what technicians do. And then I said, well, how do I do it? And he said, well, you just, what's that expression? You slip and slide or something like that. From one to another.
Uh-huh.
How do you do that?
So you're wanting to now store data.
Want to transfer from one hard drive to another.
Is the new hard drive bigger?
He didn't tell me that. I don't even know how to access it to find out.
Well, if you... if you go to your My Computer, okay?
My Computer, all right.
Right. Now you should see not just your C drive, right? You've also got a new drive in there, probably.
Yes, I have noticed that when I've been working on, getting the, transferring things to CDRWs.
Right. So that's that hard drive.
I have a removable disk, and I have a CDRW,
uh-huh.
And I have a local disk C and a local disk F.
Right.
Those are the hard drives.
Right, and local disk F is probably the new hard drive
that
you put in there. Now, if you're just talking about offloading some documents from your main drive, your old drive, your C drive,
right,
so that you clear out some space.
Right.
In other words, just using that new F drive as a storage space.
That's what I want.
All you got to do is highlight those documents and drag them out from C over to F, right?
Well, just a second. Now, how do you, what step do you highlight?
Well, just, you could just hold your left mouse button down and run it across those files so that they're, you know, they're made colored, they're highlighted.
Yeah, the blue tone.
Right,
around.
Right. And then, you know, drag and drop, just like you normally do.
Or well,
you,
but how do I know I'm getting it from one disk to another disk?
Well, if you highlight them in C and drag them over to F, okay.
Wait just a second. Now where I'm looking at my computer page right now.
All right.
You know, brought it up.
Right.
And I've got local disk C and local. So then where do I get to my files?
Well, they're on local disk C. Okay.
Yeah.
So if you open up my computer.
Yeah.
And you open up local disk C.
Right.
Okay. Now you should see a whole bunch of folders there.
I've got Alt G, my downloads, Windows.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. So that's where all your files are. They're in various locations in those folders. Probably, if you're going to offload documents, they're probably there under you should have a folder that says Documents and Settings. So
yeah, there's one that's My Documents.
Right, right, or My Documents. Right, that's where if you're just talking about offloading documents in order to create more space, that's where those are.
And then I just keep going through until I come to whatever it is that I'm wanting. Is, you know, my picture.
Well, yeah, you're gonna,
all that stuff.
Right, right. You're going to have to pick out what files you want to move over to that.
And, all right. So now that I get to my pictures.
Uh-huh.
For instance.
So, and there are a bunch of pictures in there, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's about 200 files.
So what you're going to what you're thinking of doing, since the problem was that he perceived that your C drive was getting full, okay? What you want to do is you want to store those pictures over on your new F drive.
Right.
And then you want to erase them off your C drive so that you free up that space.
All right. So if I click left finger or left side on a certain file, and that brings
up... So now it's highlighted, right?
Well, I brought up the file.
Well, you've double-clicked on it. You just
want to... Oh, you just want me to single-click?
Yeah, you want to click once and highlight it.
Yeah.
Okay. Now it's just highlighted, right?
Yes.
Now, don't let up on your after you click on it once. Okay. Don't let up on your mouse button.
Okay.
Have you done that?
I've just clicked it once and I've not done anything.
And you're holding your mouse button down?
Yeah.
Now can you move that file around? Drag it around?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's what you want to do. Drag it from C to your new F drive.
Well, that's the question. How do I get to that?
Okay, and then this is what I'm going to tell you right now. I'm going to confuse you even further. Okay. If you'll go to Start Programs Accessories, okay?
Start Program.
Start Button Programs Accessories.
Yeah.
And on that accessories list, do you see a file named Windows Explorer?
Windows Explorer.
Right. Start Program Accessories.
Just a second. Just Windows. Would that be in the area of XP or just separate?
It should be under. You should click your Start menu.
I got into my All Programs.
And you see All Programs. And then do you have a folder that's called Accessories?
Okay, I got it.
Okay.
Yes.
And in that folder called Accessories, do you see a file named Windows Explorer? It should be down towards the bottom of Accessories.
Yes.
Okay. Now, if you click on that and open it up, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Have you done that?
Yes, I've got both my little hourglass and my arrow.
So you've opened Windows Explorer then?
Well, I thought I had.
So now do you see a list of directories and disks, says desktop, my documents, my pictures.
Yep.
Okay. You see one that says my computer?
My computer.
Yeah, it should be on the list there.
I've got authors, DSI, my downloads, my e-books, my music, my pictures, my video.
You don't have a My Computer.
No.
Well, you should have a My Computer on there. Do you see your disks at all? Local Disk C, Local Disk F?
No, I have.
I'm not sure.
Wait a second. Now, I have something over here on the left side.
Right. That's where
I'm looking at. I was looking at what was outlined.
No. Look on the left side, and you've got down the side, you've got
I've got My Computer.
Okay, and you see how there's a plus sign out to the left of that?
Yes.
You click on that plus sign now.
Yeah, I've got 3.5 floppy disks, local disk, removable disk.
Right, and do you see your local disk C and local disk F on there?
Yes.
So if you clicked on local disk C, go ahead and do that now.
Right.
Now you get off to the right, you get a list of all your files on local disk C, right? All your folders.
The ones that we looked at before.
Right. So now what you can do is you can work with that on the right side, okay? With the stuff that's in local disk C, and you can just drag it over to the left side where that local disk F is now appearing, right?
Even in that little
Right.
Listing.
Right. Even that's exactly what you want to do.
And it'll go over there into that.
Drag it from right to left and put it on local disk F, and it should copy over there. The Windows will probably ask you whether you want to move it or copy it. And in this case, you're trying to offload space. So really what you want to do is move it.
So in other words, I'm not going to accidentally end up in something like shared documents or CDRW. Drive E.
No, not as long as you're dragging from the right side, the directory for the C disk, over to the left side, the F disk.
But the thing is that the F disk is not highlighted.
Well, it doesn't need to be because you want the C disk highlighted because you want to see your files that are in the C disk.
Right. Well, that's up on the
F disk will the F disk will become highlighted when you drag those files over there.
Okay.
You'll see it become highlighted.
Well, I have your email, Greg.
Okay. Yeah. That's exactly right. And if something goes on.
I don't mean that as an idle threat.
Yeah, if something goes on, you let me know.
As a lifeline.
We'll see what we can do for you.
Okay.
I apologize for taking up so much of your time.
Oh, that's okay.
That's okay. That's what we're here for this afternoon, and no one's been waiting, so don't feel bad at all. And we're glad to give you a hand, and everybody out there, I'm sure, has got their fingers crossed for you this afternoon. We've got just a minute left here, Greg, and we've taken care of all our callers this afternoon. Anything else you want to mention?
No, I can't think of offhand, but I would say if you're interested in an online calendar, give Google Calendar a try because it's kind of a nifty little thing, and you might find it useful. So
okay.
I'm not entirely certain whether I find it useful at this point or not, but it's fun to play with.
Well, that's the idea of the beta thing, I guess,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Okay. Greg Klein has been our guest in this portion of the Afternoon Magazine. He's science and technology reporter for the News Gazette. And Greg, again, I won't repeat it, so I'm sure that we'll get it right. Your email at the paper.
It's Klein, K-L-I-N-E, at news-gazette.com.
Very good. Okay. This is the Afternoon Magazine, and we take up this topic of computers once a month on the third Thursday of the month. So we'll be back next month in the lusty month of May. That's next month, Computers and You, third Thursday of the month.